Good evening, this is Mark Lynch, and this is Inquiry. My returning guest tonight is painter and photographer, Sally Davies. We've talked to her about her photography, now we're going to talk about her painting. Sally, welcome back to the show. It's such a pleasure to talk to you again.
Happy to be here.
I know, happy to be anywhere at this point. This is embarrassing to me, and I'm going to admit it to everybody. We talked before last time about a lot, and I think we did two interviews, about your photography work, which is outstanding, and we people should refer back to the backlog of our interviews on Inquiry to hear you talk about your photography, but I didn't know you were as much of a painter. So let me ask you one question right off the bat. Are you a painter who also photographs, a photographer who also paints, or you just simultaneously do both?
Oh boy, is that a trick question?
It's not a trick question, but it's a question looking for an answer.
Let me just say, I've always taken photos, but when I went to art school, I had a painting major and a photo minor. I didn't understand at that young age back in the early 80s that a woman could be a photographer, that you could make money doing that. Not that I ever made any money, let's be clear.
I was going to say.
Yeah. But you know what I mean? It wasn't in my wheelhouse that that was something.
Okay, wait a minute. That begs the question, too. Did you think you were going to make money painting?
Well, now I have to hang up now. I wish somebody had shaken me in 1982 or 80 and said, go get a job, you know, at a factory. You'll get a good pension and you'll, you know. I don't know. Photography to me was always, I loved it, and it was something that I got to do without anybody watching or judging or critiquing. The painting was another story. You know, I never fit in. Nobody ever liked my work at school. I always felt like the odd man out.
Huh.
But, you know, once I got through that torture, I came down to New York to finish my painting degree. And I stayed here, and I really, from 1987 until, you know, what, in 2000, whatever, I showed all over New York as a painter.
Were you doing photography at this point, too?
On the side.
Okay.
Quietly, kind of on the side.
Well, does that include any of the great series that you have? You know, that whole series of New York at Night, the different regions you've done photographs of people in their houses?
That came later.
Okay.
That came later.
Now, how would you describe your first paintings? Like, what were they like?
Oh, my God, they were horrible.
Sally.
Oh, my God. Mark, they were terrible. Well, you know, you're a kid, you're in school. I didn't know what the heck I was doing. I was very wet behind the ears.
Yep,
you know,
yep.
I didn't even know who Andy Warhol was, for God's sakes, in 1979. I wasn't a hip kid. I came from the middle of nowhere in rural Manitoba, you know.
Outside of Winnipeg?
That's right. But I kind of got going once I got down to New York to be in school down here, yeah. And a lot of my stuff was kind of native, like First Nation based. That's what they call natives in Canada.
Yeah, yeah.
And my final thesis, I guess you'd call it, at school was on Northwest Indian tribes that were tattoos, that were into tattoos.
That's really fascinating.
Yeah, it was really great.
Well, let me ask you about some of your earlier series, and then we'll talk about your new work. Talk to me about the Lucky paintings and the Lucky chair paintings of the 1990s.
Yeah, those were the first thing out of college that I started to do that really kind of put me on the map. I started to do these little paintings, and then people would commission them. Like, I even have one, like, this guy was renovating his house, so he needed a Lucky renovation painting. They were really funny. And then one day I was visiting my family in Winnipeg, and I was at the local mall, and there was a person who was selling these tiny little doll furniture things in wood, unfinished, right?
Yeah.
And a friend of mine said, you know, call me nuts, but those chairs would be really funny as Lucky chairs. So that's, you know, flash ahead. I ended up painting probably about 4,000 of those.
Now, what size?
Oh, they're 5 inches tall.
Oh, wow. So they were life-size?
5 inches tall.
Oh, I thought the chairs were small for like a dollhouse.
They are. That's what I just said. 5 inches tall.
Oh, okay. Oh, okay.
Yeah. Really little. Like even smaller than Barbie.
Okay.
So I started painting those things, and oh, my God, that was the beginning of it all. They ended up in everybody's house. I couldn't even go to a party without seeing one of those chairs.
Wow.
And I ended up kind of arthritic from painting all those. So at some point, I had to stop. And they weren't very expensive. I think they were a couple of $100. So I wasn't buying a condo on the sales either. Yeah.
What about tattoo paintings?
So those kind of came after the lucky ones.
Okay.
And they were, for the most part, like 40s, you know, vintage pinup tattoos.
Yeah, right.
And oh my God, the flack that I got for doing those, you can't even imagine. I was not a feminist, and what the hell was wrong with me, and nobody was going to buy those, and... You know, I ended up with a show at OK Harris with those that sold out. And then I had another show that sold out. And I think I have like two of those left only from that time.
Now, when you did the tattoo paintings, was there also text in the paintings too? Because I noticed that some of your earlier works have texts in it.
Yeah. When I started to paint the lucky paintings, I quickly realized that I cannot name these paintings because there were hundreds of them were going out of my studio. So I thought, screw it, I'm just going to painting number 14, painting number 15. And then when I got, and I kept a ledger, which I still have, and when I, it was before computers, by the way. And then when I started doing the tattoos, I thought, oh, heck, I'm just going to keep with the numbers. So that was a thing of mine, was the numbers.
Right, painting 663, 661, and stuff like that.
Yeah. Yeah. And then after the tattoo paintings, I got a little more sophisticated and I started doing what they called product paintings.
Yep.
And they were basically paintings of mid-century modern furniture, fancy things. Like I had a whole show on high-end shoes. Sarah Jessica Parker has one of those. And then there'd be a little bubble in the shoe painting that said, oh, I don't know, like a... To add height and attract sophisticated Europeans.
Hey, you know, I would buy that.
Exactly. And everything had a thing. Like I did a giant 7-6 foot painting of a beautiful Eames chair that's actually at Harvard now. They have that in their collection. And the bubble on there said to something about enhance your art collection. So it was really easy for press because...
Oh, yeah. They were definitely postmodern.
Yeah. And sort of a little bit wry and a big comment on our consumerism, which people love to write about.
And they were very self-referential. That was really big at that time.
Yeah.
Did you have to lecture about the paintings?
Did I? No. Mm-mm.
Did you refuse to talk about the paintings?
No, I was never invited to do that.
Oh, wow.
At the time, yeah. I mean, I get invited to talk about my photography now, but I didn't in those days.
You also painted things like a Roy Lichtenstein painting. I think it was painting number 239.
Oh, my God. Mark, I painted tons of Picassos, tons of Lichtensteins, tons of Warhols. That was the point. I would knock off these paintings, but then I'd put like a little in the little bubble, like with the Lichtenstein to, you know, enhance your decor and improve your art collection.
Yeah, but that's really cool. I think those would still be popular.
I don't know. Who knows? Maybe I was a little before my time. I don't know. I don't really know. I don't know that young kids, this is another conversation, but I don't know that young kids really even know who Roy Lichtenstein was.
You know what? I think you're absolutely right. I think everybody's got their nose in their phone. And it's gone on too long. I don't think a lot of people know a lot about anything.
Well, people under 40 for sure.
Absolutely. There's also a great painting of Freud and Keith Haring.
Yeah, believe it or not, that never sold. That's sitting in my studio right now. I love it.
It's a great painting.
What? Well, thank you.
Talk to me about that painting.
I'm
going to make you talk about your work.
Okay. No, you know, I'm a lot better talking about my photography. I'm a little more brushed up. But I remember doing that painting, and it was like obviously very symbolic. Freud representing the psychology of whatever you're looking at, and Keith Haring's baby. I was just posing a question, like, what the hell is this, basically? And that was that.
Wow.
Yeah.
Now, talk to me about what happens next before your newer paintings, which are very different.
Well, you know, let me just say the crossover moment was in 2000.
Mm-hmm.
I was showing at Gracie Mansion Gallery in the East Village, and I had been showing there for years with my paintings. And I hit a wall, and I said, I just want to have a show of photography. And she was like, well, you know, nobody really knows your photography, and what is it going to be? And I said, well, so what are you working on? And I said, well, I'm building these dioramas.
Huh.
So I built a diorama of where I lived, and I photographed the floor and printed it out and pasted it in and put up. Yeah, it was just ridiculous. And it was aliens in drag, basically. It was these, like, 8-foot alien figures that fit Barbie's little sister Scooter clothes. So it got me. I'll send you some of these after we get off.
Oh, man.
You'll laugh. But I dove into the miniature world. Huh. And, oh, my God, Mark, I can't even tell you and whoever's listening to this. I found at one point a miniature Versailles on the Internet that someone had built.
What?
Yeah. No, I mean, people are kooky for these miniatures. And so I had people sending me, like, beautiful miniatures, like all in the photos. You'll see them, Wonder Bread, a whole kitchen, you know, pots and pans, chips, food, you know.
Wow.
Barbie. Yeah, it was incredible. So I said, that's what I want to do. She was like, oh, my God, you know, what am I getting myself into here? And the photos were like 4 by 6 feet, which, you know, that long ago, that whole digital thing was scrappy. I mean, they hadn't really figured it out yet. So
right.
It was a bit dodgy, but they turned out, and it sold out. The whole show sold out. So that was the beginning of, I think I'm going to not paint for a while. This is more fun.
It's really fascinating hearing you talk about painting and then talk about photography. When you talk about photography, you often seems a lot more directed, and the painting is a lot more exploring, like just sort of trying out different things.
100%, and I couldn't have said it better myself. Photography to me is easy,
uh-huh.
and it's fun. You know, I'm not curing cancer. I'm just going outside with my camera, and I'm going to find some fun stuff because where I live is fun. Or, I don't know. I can find fun stuff.
Yeah, but it is incredibly wonderful photography. I mean, it's not like you're just shooting anything. I mean, you're taking a lot of things into consideration when you're shot, but that's probably your natural eye. But your photographs are just stunning. I mean, I have one of the books of the New York New Yorkers, and I love that book. I have it right here.
Oh, thank you.
And I love the Los Angeles book, too. And I know that you did other photography like that in the Midwest and in Florida and stuff like that. But I hear you talk about your paintings. It just seems like it's really like you have no idea what's going to happen.
that is correct. The plan is to have no plan. And I hate having no plan, which is why these paintings are kind of kooky, you know. Well, let me just say, because you're a little familiar now with some of my other art, I always painted pictures of things. They were always representational, right?
Uh-huh.
And so when I decided in COVID that I was going to start painting again, I knew I wanted to go abstract. I didn't want to be chained to the shoe or whatever the heck I was having to paint. And I knew that was going to be really challenging because I've never thought in those terms before. It's really, really hard. It isn't what people, you know, this is the kind of things that people go, oh, my kid could do that.
Exactly. They don't understand what goes into abstract art.
No, they do not. And I'm not sure I did either until I really started. And then it was like, oh, my God, you've stripped away all the distraction of the shoe or whatever. And now you have to balance out this area with color.
Right.
And every time you put a color down, the other one doesn't work. So it's like the barber with the haircut. So now you have to change that color. And then you're like, okay, you sort of get the color down, but now you have to have a shape. Otherwise, you're Jackson Pollock, which I love, but I'm, you know, not ripping off Jackson Pollock. I don't know. It's just, it's so cerebral. And I hate to even say that because it's against my religion. But it really, really is. It's like going to school every day. Like today, I had a painting half finished that was like, meh, not sure. And I thought, I'm going to get up and tackle that and finish it. You know what ended up with it? I scraped it off in the kitchen sink and sanded it down, and it's covered in white paint now. I have to start all over again tomorrow.
You know, it's fascinating. I used to teach a course at the Worcester Art Museum called Embracing the Abstract, and it was for adults. And I would get these classes, exactly what you were talking about. You know, people would come in and go, yeah, absolutely. It's bullshit. You know, they're goofing on the audience. It's a racket. Right. And then I would have to bring them through, and it was like kicking and screaming to like understand, to really look at, first of all, look at, and then to try to get a sense of different abstract artists. And it is really, really difficult. And it's like poetry. It's really easy to do a bad poem. It's really easy to do a bad abstract painting.
Exactly.
It's very tough to do a good one.
That sure is the truth.
You'll listen.
At any given time, at least right now, I have moments where I think, well, aren't I all that in a bag of chips? You know, these are okay. And then I get up the next day and I'm like, oh my God, did I actually show these to a dealer? Like, these are fucking awful. So, I don't know.
I think that's a total – people I know who are working the abstract, working the non-figurative, that's a typical reaction.
Is it?
Of course.
Okay, well,
because you can't ground it to anything. It's not like you're doing a painting of a parrot, which we're going to talk about this in a little bit about your painting some birds. But
oh, yeah, that was a whole thing, too. Anyway.
Well, wait a minute. Let me do a station ID.
Yeah.
You're listening to WICN 90.5 FM. This is Inquiry. My name is Mark Lynch. My returning guest tonight, it is always a pleasure to talk to her, is painter and photographer Sally Davies. And we've talked about her photography a lot, but we haven't talked about her painting, which is what we're doing tonight. I got to ask you about this bird series, which was really funny because you know that I'm a field ornithologist, right?
I know. A birder.
Yeah.
You're a birder.
Talk to me about your choice of subjects, because you have cardinals, you have a white throat, you have a jay, you have a hummingbird, those are all birds that are found around here. Then you have a rose-colored starling, a black-whiskered bulbul.
Yeah.
And then somewhere in the... you have a moose, and then you have just goofy, cartoony birds. Talk to me about that series.
Well, yeah. The birds are okay, let me just say that I have a tattoo on my arm of a bird.
What kind?
That I got in 1972. Mm. So for whatever reason, birds are an ongoing theme in my life, maybe from a past life. I don't know. But, you know, I don't know. This is 20, over 20 years ago, and I was really getting into this, believe me, this comes around in full circle. I was getting into mid-century modern stuff in the 90s, because I had friends who were turning me on to this furniture and stuff, and I wanted to paint. I was so in love with Werner Panton.
Oh.
And I thought, and somebody had bought me this beautiful big book of all his designs, and I thought, what could I do to amalgamate my love of this stuff with nature? Because I was living out in the country at that time, upstate New York.
Oh, wow.
And you know how it goes. You don't think about it. You just stumble into the studio one day and you go, okay, I have a 10-foot canvas. I'm going to do a giant Werner Panton design. So I did that, and then I thought, I'm going to put a big bird on it. And lo and behold, that's how it started.
Put a bird
so
on it.
A lot of those bird paintings have kind of mid-century patterns going on behind them.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I love the way you work.
I think doesn't everybody do that?
No.
Oh. Really?
No. I think everybody has their own way that they work. But you really, you're just really funny because you really just explore where your thoughts go. And that's great that you put it on Canvas. A lot of people just do the thoughts. They didn't do anything else. And so I can understand you're in upstate New York. There's a cardinal around. There's a white throat. There's a jay. Where did you pick up rose-colored starling, which is an Asiatic bird?
Somebody bought me a giant, gorgeous book of birds.
Oh, wow.
Because I had done a couple of sort of local little birds, and they were like, oh, my God, check these birds out. And I was like, holy shit, like these are like African birds.
Yep.
It's just fantastic. In fact, the one in front of this Werner Pant, the 10-footer, is still sitting in my apartment here.
Wow.
And that came from that book.
But you also did cartoony birds.
I think the cartoony birds came after that.
Okay.
Yeah.
We got to talk about your new paintings because we're going to run out of time. I'm so fascinated by all this other stuff. And I have to mention, I know this is just sort of, you may not want to talk about it, but your artwork was in Sex and the City.
Oh, yeah.
I think that's I'm not one of those jaded people who thinks, oh, big deal. I thought that was pretty cool.
Listen, you know, this is a quick story. This is 1995 or something.
Yeah.
And a friend of mine was the director and producer of that show. So they were in New York shooting, and he called me up one day and he said, Sal, how would you like to make a little bit of quick money? And I'm like, well, hum me a few bars. This is sounding a little, you know, dodgy. She said, no, we're going to send a crew over. I want every single painting.
Oh, wow.
We have.
Oh, wow.
And we'll pick them up. We'll wrap them up. You know, we'll shoot the following night, and then we'll bring them back with a check. And if we put a hole in one, you'll get the full retail value.
Wow.
So that was it. A crew came over, wrapped up every painting, and took them down to Soho, and you know, they filmed this episode. And
it's called it's the episode The Cheating Curve.
Correct.
Yep. Hey, yeah. That's a huge deal. Your paintings were also in the movie 200 Cigarettes?
Yeah, that was my, well, I had a couple of movie things. That was my second movie thing. My very first one was Ted Demme. And I don't know if you remember Ted Demme.
Oh, I do.
I think he invented Yo MTV.
Yep.
Rap.
Yep.
Okay. So I did not know him, right? I didn't know anybody, really. I was just this, you know, goofy Canadian in my studio painting. And one day his secretary called and said, Ted would like to buy three of your boxer paintings. I have paintings of boxers that I was years ago doing. And I was like, for what? She said, well, he's doing this movie. And so that was that. That was my very first time that someone in sort of media, you know, really gave me a shove. So that was that. Then there was 200 Cigarettes, and then there was Sex and the City. And then I stopped doing it because nobody wanted to pay anymore.
Well, let's talk about you. We only have minutes left, amazingly. We could go on forever. Your new paintings, large format, they're abstract, but they're sort of biomorphic shapes. People have seen the artwork of John Hans Arp. They reminded me somewhat of that. You have an interesting color palette. Talk to me about that.
Well, let me just say the most recent comment on these paintings, somebody said, these are a cross between Hilma Klimt and Kenny Scharf.
Huh. Yeah, but Scharf has really got, I thought he'd got garish colors and too much cartooniness in it. It's funny. When I look at works of art, I always think, like, could I live with it for 10 years?
Right.
Hanging and seeing it every day and not punch it.
Right.
And yours are very livable.
Oh, thank you. I'm not sure I can live with most of this stuff.
Well, no artist wants to live with their own stuff.
Oh, you just look at it and you see the headache, you know?
Well, you always second guess yourself. You know, you always think, should I have put this color there? So talk, in the few minutes that we have left, literally two, talk to me about how you're choosing colors.
I don't think about them. I just get in the
Why am I not surprised?
Because I don't want to think about anything. You know, I have not even art. I don't want to think about anything right now.
Oh, my God.
I don't know. You know, everybody has their colors. Their colors are very cosmic, you know, I think.
Yep.
Yeah, you just go for them.
Yeah.
You just go for them.
But a lot of them are muted colors too, although there's some brilliant whites in there also. And they are forms. I mean, they're not really totally abstract. They're forms. And it's the way you sort of balance out these forms that it's fascinating.
Correct. The first three or four of these that I did were very bright.
Mm-hmm.
This is full disclosure. And a really good friend of mine who used to be a director at a gallery that I showed at, she phoned me up and she said, "Sal, tone these down, will you?" I said, "What do you mean?" She goes, "Just try it." She goes, "They're just a bit much."
Oh, whoa.
Stay with the stuff. I love her. I don't care. I'll try anything. I said, okay. So I kind of valued down the colors. And she was right. I kind of like them better.
I like the valued down ones, I have to admit. Hey, yeah. Sally, we're all out of time. If people want to see examples of what we're talking about, what could they do?
For now, my only place my paintings are is on Instagram, which is Sally Davies Paintings.
And I recommend you go there. There's a lot of works there. There's really a lot of works there.
My archive from my entire life is on.
Do you have gallery representation?
Not yet.
Okay.
I'm waiting till I get a few more of these, and then I'm going to pound the pavement.
Excellent. You know, it's always fun talking to you.
Oh, thank you for having me, Mark.
Really, I always find you. I find you're surprising in a good way. My returning guest tonight is painter and photographer Sally Davies. And by the way, make sure you check out her photography, too. She's a photographer who paints, a painter who also photographs. And please check out her work on Instagram. You'll get a really good sense of her work. Sally, it's a pleasure. Hey, when you get a show, let me know.
Oh, I definitely will. All right.
You're listening to WICN 90.5 FM. This is Inquiry. My name's Mark Lynch. Good night.